For P97, welcome back to the second half of week two's worth of material. Today we're going to have a guest lecture, and I also want to remind you that you have two articles to read that you will be responding to in your critical engagement and your audio responses, and you'll get your question for your audio response at the end of this lecture with Corey. So today we're going to be joined by Corey Locke, who is currently an assistant coach for the Guelph Storm, director of player and coach development for the Burlington City Rep Hockey Club. He's formerly a National Hockey League player, an American Hockey League player, a CHL player. He twice won the Red Tilson Award as the league's most outstanding player in the OHL, I should say, 2 years in a row, and had an absolutely prolific scoring career in the American Hockey League as well as the Canadian Hockey League. Perhaps most notably, during his time in the CHL, Corey Locke scored 151 points in one season for the Ottawa 67 in 2002-2003, a record that still stands to this day. He was drafted in the fourth round by the Montreal Canadiens in the 2003 entry draft, 113th overall, and had a long and distinguished professional career both in North America and internationally. We're going to start this week with Corey because it's an interesting sort of look at the way the professional hockey operates. Now, we have a slideshow that demonstrates the various structures of the league, and Corey's experiences are quite unique in that he essentially has played in every single type of league that you can play in, and he played at a very high level in all of them. So when you're listening to Corey's guest lecture here, certainly, yes, he's got some wonderful experiences that he's willing to share with us, but also keep in mind the journey that he's went on and where he's at in his professional career right now. He's speaking to us as a 38-year-old who's trying to get his career on track as a coach and a director of player development, but keep in mind the long journey that hockey often takes us on. It's one of the more remarkable things about the professional hockey industry is this long and protracted journey that players can be taken on throughout their playing careers. And before we get started with Corey's guest lecture, I do want to again note that I've been listening to all the audio responses. I really appreciate listening to them, and I really appreciate the work that you're putting into them. Make sure that you are making reference to the slides themselves, to the guest lectures as well. That will, of course, affect your ability to be graded highly for these responses. So make sure you're responding to the course content and not simply perhaps just sort of sharing your independent thoughts on this subject matter, though those are welcome as well, but I do need you to ground them in the course materials when you are giving your audio responses. So with no further ado, here's a discussion that Corey and I had a couple weeks back about his playing career. Joined by Corey Locke. Corey, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Corey, if you could you explain your position and what you do in hockey right now?
Yeah, I'm the executive director of the Burlington Eagles Hockey Club in Burlington here. It's a nonprofit organization where we have roughly 36 teams from AAA, AA, and single-A teams right from the ages of U7 all the way up to U18.
Fantastic. And if you could you give me an idea of what your first experience playing hockey was? What was your earliest memories playing the game? How'd you get involved in hockey?
Well, my mom always tells a good story that I wanted to play hockey when I was 5 years old. So they bought all the equipment, signed me up for hockey, and got dressed, and they put me on the ice, and I cried, and I didn't want to play, and they pulled me out, and then that was it. And then the next year later, I asked to play again, and they were a little reluctant to do it again as I went through it, but then I loved it, I guess, and it was a whole wonderful experience my mom and dad told me about. One of the stories, I was an offensive player when I played through my junior career and professional career, but I guess my mom would say that I would go just stand by the net and I would just wait for the puck, and I would never back check, and I would never go out of the one end, and the coaches would have to carry me like to put me in the right spot, and I would just go right back to the net front. So I guess I knew where to score goals, and I guess I had to learn the other side of the game as I got a little bit older.
And you knew exactly who you were as a player from a young age.
right, age five or six, for sure. I knew I liked scoring goals, and I guess I knew where I had a knack of being around the net to do that. So.
When you were playing hockey, at what point do you remember thinking to yourself, you know, I'm pretty good at this. I might be able to do this for the rest of my life.
I think when you're in minor hockey, when you get to around this U16, AAA, U18 age, 15, 16, obviously the OHL is a big goal, and it's talked about because that's the highest level you can play in Ontario for junior hockey players and teenagers, I guess. So when I got drafted, I played a season of junior in Newmarket in my hometown, and then I went off to Ottawa and played. And I would say in my second year at a really good second year in the OHL, 18-year-old year, and I think that was when it was like, hey, maybe I could, the wish of just being a professional hockey player or playing at the highest level, that dream became a little bit more reality and more of a goal to be achieved than maybe just a wish as a childhood dream.
And Corey, I think you're being a little modest. Maybe some of us here have had good years before. You had 151 points in a season in junior. That is far beyond a good year. That is an outstanding, like historically good year. Can you speak a little bit about how your life changed during that season? Like, did it feel hockey had sort of shifted from you a little bit during that season?
Yeah. So my first year I went to Ottawa. I got hurt 6 games into the regular season. I took a clean body check. I probably weighed 150 pounds at that time and got hit by a guy that was 220 and a lot bigger than I was. Clean hit. Nothing wrong with the body check. It just separated my shoulder and cracked my collarbone. So I was out six, seven weeks. So, coming from junior A and then making the transition to the OHL, it's a big step for anyone. And then I get hurt early on. I had a good start, but I just got hurt and it happens. I came back and I had a really strong finish, and I think having a strong finish to that season, and then I had a good playoff, and that kind of gave me the confidence for next year. And to be honest, in that 18-year-old year, I think I connected with a teammate named Matt Foy. We had a great connection, and we had such great chemistry. And my other line mate for the majority of the year, Scott Shepherd, we just had instant chemistry, and we had such a fun time at sharing the puck and wanting to produce offense, but not caring who scored and who got assists. It was just, let's keep driving offense and trying to score as much as possible as a team and as a line. And I think that's when things kind of took off, and it was, obviously a really enjoyable year, and, had to get over some early setbacks, but I think having some success later in my injury season led into a lot of confidence going into my 18-year-old year. Also, I got to play under one of my good friends, Zenon Konopka. He was a captain. He's a St. Catharines Niagara on the Lake boy, and he was a captain as when I was 17, and he was 20. He really took me under his wing. Even when I was hurt, he drove me places. We would hang out. I looked up to him, and he was our leader. He was our kind of first line center. And, I learned a lot from him, and I learned how much pride he took in playing for the 67s and being a leader and being a guy that, was counted on every night. And that I learned a lot from him, and, I tried to take that in because he left the following year, and there's a gap to be filled, and I'm glad I was able to kind of fill those shoes.
Mr. Yeah, I believe even Zenon is now works for the Ice Dogs, perhaps even. I think he's in currently the consultant role there. Yeah. That's in terms of learning how to be a professional. When do you feel like you first started to learn? Or maybe you can even take us through the draft process if that's a part of the answer to this question. But was it during that 18-year-old season? When was the first time you started to feel like, you know what, I am a pro hockey player at this point?
Yeah, I played for in Ottawa. Going back to Ottawa, I played for a legendary coach at Brian Kilray, Hockey Hall of Famer, and spent the majority of his time coaching in the Ottawa 67s for 30 plus years. And he treated you like a pro when you were 16 to 20. He really did. He demanded you come to the rink and work and perform, but he might have gave you a little bit more leeway or outside the rink that kind of made you have to grow up a lot quicker and make, you know, good decisions. So I think I learned it in junior, and then when I came into pro, I think with having a little bit more freedom through my junior experience, it kind of helped me, you know, become a pro a little bit quicker and understand, you know, what was needed and, you know, expectations and how to prepare and you know, what to do to get myself ready and kind of help the team. So, you know, Brian Kilroy, I owe a lot to him, because, you know, he taught me how to be as consistent as possible. You know, he would always tell a story that he brought me in and said, hey, you got to be as good. You know, we played on Friday nights and we got 10,000 fans at the time. And he said, you got to be as good on a home night on Friday as you are on Sunday afternoon in a place like Brampton, or that doesn't have very many fans. So, you know, he made me to be as consistent as possible. And I think that's one of the biggest things that, you know, if you want to have some success in any professional career, you have to have some consistency, and you gotta buy into what works, and you gotta stay with it. So I owe a lot to Brian Kilroy for sure.
If you take us through the process of when you were drafted, I mean, what was that like? I mean, you're a player, and again, offensive dynamo. I mean, those are unbelievable numbers in junior. Did you expect to be drafted? You know, what was the draft process like? What was sort of the lessons that you learned coming out of the draft?
Yeah, I remember. You know, everyone wants to be drafted. You know, everyone wants to hear their name called as from an NHL club. And I was no different. You know, I had a really good year going into my draft. But I was also in a very strong draft class. And where, you know, Central Scouting had me ranked is kind of exactly where I went. So can't really fault them for where I got drafted. And, you know, they did their job, and they were probably you know, I'd probably agree that they were bang on where they went. Obviously, I wish I would have went higher and maybe got some different opportunities because you go a little bit higher. But at the end of the day, you make your own opportunities. And, you know, the draft is you hope someone calls your name. You hope someone takes a chance on you, and you hope that you can deliver on someone, you know, thinking that you can be a professional for that organization. And, you know, there's so many hockey players around the world now. There's so many countries that have improved their development programs and are producing high-end hockey players. And the challenge to be drafted and the goal to get drafted and to achieve that, you're just fighting with more and more players around the world that have the same goal. And, you know, you got to be you gotta have something special if these teams are taking a chance and trying to add you to their organization and their program.
Right, and this begins a very long and successful professional career in hockey. What was the first lesson you learned in sort of because we start to feel like a professional, perhaps thanks to the guidance of Kilroy in Ottawa, but what's the first sort of like, wow, being a pro is sort of a different kind of step? When was the first time you started experiencing that after being drafted and maybe after moving out of junior?
Yeah, I think so my first year was 04. I was drafted by Montreal Canadiens, and their farm team was in Hamilton, Ontario here. So kind of nice to play in Ontario, close to home. Mom and dad were around, came and watched me a lot. My brother was around at the time. And then, you know, a lot of buddies went to school in Ontario and that were close that I could still see, and maybe that I didn't get to see when I was in Ottawa. So it was kind of, I kind of lived the best, you know, best of both worlds, where I can still see family and friends and play kind of close to home and professionally. But that year was the lockout year. The lockout ended, it went the whole full season. And I think it was eye-opening that year because there were so many guys that came down that would have been in the NHL, so many young stars that would have came down. And the reality of, wow, like, you're playing for keeps now, like in junior. Kind of everyone's, you know, kind of in the same age group for the most part, 16 to 20. You go to school or you go to university, you do, school visits, you're doing something during the day, you're practicing at night, Some guys might have girlfriends, maybe not, but like there's no wives, kids. You're not providing for a family back home. You're not paying for a mortgage. You're not doing those things. And I think once you get to pro and you see some of the older guys and some that are, you know, veterans that have gone through and trying to keep their jobs and wanting to continue to play. And I think that was kind of eye-opening, was just, it was a different culture. It was just a different time. And it was just a different situation where made you grow up quickly. You had to learn quickly. You had to learn on the fly. No one kind of prepares you for this, to be honest with you. You kind of just have to throw yourself in and learn how to do it. And I think it was just eye-opening where there was so much talent in the league, but at the same time, everyone's playing for keeps and it becomes a job. It's a job. And at the end of the day, hockey's a business. I'm sure you guys talk about this on a daily basis. It's a business and you have to perform, whether you're player, coach, GM. There's something that you always have to battle through and achieve, and there's pressures.
Absolutely. And can you speak of, you said, mentioned that hockey is a business, and you know, someone, you're extremely experienced in the sort of business aspects of the hockey industry. Do you have any memories of the first time you really started to realize, maybe it wasn't something that happened to you, that maybe you saw around you, they saw, and it really sunk in that, wow, this is a nasty business?
I'm not so sure recalling one thing. I know today with the salary cap, I think that's pretty crazy where, you know, you can't get called up because a team's overpaid other players and the management of money. It's kind of, I think that would be hard as a player, being like, hey, there's opportunities sometimes. You know, I know Vegas at one time had to play short because they just couldn't call anyone up. Like, you're down in the minors, you're grinding, you're trying to perform, you're trying to give yourself that chance to get called up, and you can't go because of salary cap issues. It's pretty crazy. So you realize it becomes a business. And, you know, there's 32 teams in the NHL. You know, there's 32 minor hockey, AHL teams, sorry. You know, there's 20 OHL teams. Everyone's trying to achieve the same goal of winning at the end of the year. And it becomes a business. And sometimes you got to pay for players. You overspend. You make trades. Everything's every little aspect is business oriented.
Yeah. Just speaking of your experience in the minor leagues, and you had an unbelievably successful professional career in many different leagues. Did you ever feel a sense of frustration given the fact that you had produced basically at every place you'd ever been in your entire hockey career, including the American League, this sort of business aspect? I mean, you're speaking at a time in which teams were trying to work out what the salary cap was, and they were trying to figure out, you know, how best to manage their cap. Did you ever feel like it was hard to sort of keep the determination going, or was hockey always something that you were able to find solace in during that time?
I don't think that the determination was never kind of a factor. I enjoyed playing in the AHL so much. People ask if I enjoyed Europe or the AHL better. Both lifestyles were great, but I did love North America just because, like, you were always one call up. You were always one phone call away from getting back to the NHL, or you know, I hate to say it, but one injury or one situation where, you know, you were right there. So the determination, it's always dangling in front of you. So I don't think that was an issue. Of course, if I said there was no frustrations, I'd be lying to you and your group here. You want to put yourself in the best situation possible to give yourself an opportunity. I got some awesome advice. Jerry Donahue, he's a comedian. I'm sure Jerry D, he goes by Jerry D, and I'm sure many people know who he is. Used to be a supply teacher. He used to be my dad's supply teacher. Long story short, he did some hockey stuff. He coached some minor hockey and stuff like that, ran some hockey camps and stuff, big hockey background. And we became friends, and we still are. And he gave me a great piece of advice when I was, you know, early in my pro career. He said, you just be the best you can be at where you are. You can't control getting called up, and you don't have that say, but why don't you just be the best at what you do? And on a daily basis and in your games. And then he even took it farther. He said, you know, if you have the puck, be the best passer. You know, if you're in a shooting area, be the best scorer. If you're playing away from the puck, be the best defense. Like, so that was just such a great piece of advice that I took to heart. And, you know, I had some success in the AHL and, you know, with, you know, a couple championships and some personal awards and stuff. And you always hope those get you to exactly where you are. And, but I don't think I would achieve that if I got disappointed or discouraged, or the determination would have fallen out of place. And, I guess the only time that it did, you know, was really frustrating, but, you know, it's kind of, you know, you make the move to Europe, you know, that's kind of, you know, that maybe the time's coming to an end where that dream of the NHL might not be it. And then you try to, you know, extend your career in Europe and try to do something over there that's worthwhile for your family and in your, the rest of your career and stuff like that. So.
And can you speak to that jump that you made? What was that like? How was there was it a difficult adjustment to make when you made the jump to Europe? Because you ended up playing in some very different European leagues that have very distinct hockey cultures and hockey histories and styles of play. You've played in Finland and Germany. I mean, tell us about that journey as a whole.
Yeah, I had some opportunities to go over earlier to Europe. Some clubs were interested earlier, and I stayed in North America trying to, you know, make the NHL or playing as many games as possible and stuff like that. And when I kind of saw that coming to an end, and obviously, you know, there's rules in the American League. There's only so many veterans that each team can have. The league was going younger and younger, and there's just less opportunities, right? So going to Europe was to extend my career. And I always kind of knew I was going to go there. Back to your first question, when did you think you were going to be, when you had a chance to do this for kind of a living? I remember being in Ottawa, and I can kind of recall being in, you know, my billets, my room at my billets, and, you know, thinking, hey, I'm going to play in Europe one day, and, you know, it's going to be pretty cool. It's going to be a different life experience, and it'll be fun at the time. And it was, you know, and, you know, I went over, I'll never forget it, because my wife gave birth to our daughter 3 weeks before we jumped on a plane to go to Finland for the first time. So, you know, doing the dad thing and the fatherhood thing, you know, by yourself with your wife in a different country where you don't know anyone, and you're walking in where it's just you and her and your newborn. You know, obviously maybe I should have rethought that thing. We should have thought the timing on that, but in hindsight, I'm glad we did it for as close as I am with my daughter and wife and stuff like that. But, you know, they're tough decisions, but going to Europe was fantastic. And obviously there's an adjustment period. There definitely was for me. It was fatherhood. It was new culture. It was new league. It was just the way Europeans think of hockey and do things differently. And, you know, it took me some time. And, you know, just like it took me time when I went to Hamilton too, it takes time. And sometimes success doesn't come overnight. And I've had some good successes in Europe, and, you know, it's kind of the same as it went in North America. It started a little slower, picked up, and, you know, and then there's always kind of an end to it.
If there are any of these, what are the biggest misconceptions about playing in Europe, broadly speaking? I mean, you've had such a diverse set of experiences across European leagues. Did you find that there's, and then you've also returned to North America to play as well, so you've sort of seen it all from all sides. Are there misconceptions about the European leagues as a whole, or is there a misconception about playing hockey in Europe, period?
I don't think so. I think there's so much information out there now. Maybe, you know, when players were going before my time, and then maybe my time, there wasn't as much, but there's so much information out there now. There's so many resources or agents, or there's ways to view games and understand teams and players and where you'd want to go and maybe where you don't want to go. And I think there's so many resources out there that I think players have the opportunity to educate themselves and kind of pick where, not, shouldn't say pick, but, you know, maybe focus on, you know, where they would like to go or how they would do it, or, you know, set out a path. And I think sometimes before, and it would be well before my generation of players, that, you know, you just went over and you're probably way more blind to what you're getting yourself into. And I think now with just the information out there and the way people talk and connect and the way people use social media, you can have a really good feel on, you know, what's all about the city that you're going to, or how the rink is, or the travel. I don't think many things surprise players much once you get over there or before you head over.
And looking back at your career from the way you started, obviously in Newmarket towards the end of Ridgers before COVID, how has the game changed in the way you experienced it during that time?
Yeah, it's changed. Obviously, when I came in, it was a big, you know, obviously I'm talking pro here, you know, like junior to pro. You know, I think when I played through the OHL and early in my career in the AHL, it was a clutch and grab league. It was big. It was strong. It was, you know, it was a different game, where now it's kind of gone all speed and skill. And I use that loosely, right? Of course, there's tons of skills players when I early, and there's really tough players in today's games too. But there has been a transition. I don't think anyone would say there hasn't. But, you know, I think once you took out the red line and you create more speed and you got fours flying around, and, you know, D have to be much more mobile, and, you know, there's less hooking, there's less cross-checking, there's less grabbing onto guys. The game's changed, right? And everyone's kind of adapting to how quick it is now. So I think that's what I've seen the most, is where there's, you know, the speed kills, and speed's, I guess, always killed. But now sometimes you can't even be touched. So obviously even more speed works for these players of today's generation.
And if you were giving advice to a young Corey Locke, or to a player who is, you know, your style of game, your size, your skill level, I mean, what would you tell that same player now if they were embarking on a career at that age that you started your career?
Great question. I think like if you're talking on ice stuff, I wish that, like, I obviously focused on my play away from the puck as a hockey player. You know, I that's one thing for sure. You know, when I was in junior and stuff, I got a lot of leeway and I had the puck a lot, and you had to adjust when I get to pro. But I think, you know, I think I'd say to anyone that's going into hockey or thinking about, you know, going down this professional aspect, like, enjoy it. It's the game's so great. And I don't know, I'm extremely busy now. I'm involved with our Burlington Eagles organization here, where we have, you know, 36 teams, and I do skill development stuff and with the Guelph Storm, and you know, I've had to lend some hands on lend I did I've had to go and coach some of my teams in Burlington. So I'm busy. I'm out a lot of nights. I'm in the rink every single day, and I still come home and I watch hockey on TV, and my wife's like, how do you do it? Like, and I, like, aren't you sick of it? And I say, no, like, I love the game. I think I'm a student of the game. I'm always looking for new things to add. You know, I listen to coaches talk, pre-game, post-game. You know, I watch the players, the highlights, the structure, the strategy. And, you know, I just think, you know, hockey's such a great game, and, you know, always trying to learn. And, you know, obviously there's a business side to it too, which, you know, I'm learning more about in the role I am with the Eagles. And, you know, I got some great board members that I can lean on and are very successful in what they do outside of their volunteer hours with the club. So, you know, I'm fortunate, and, you know, you lean on people, you ask questions, and you continue to learn.
Perfect. One last question for you, Corey. Thank you so much for your time. If you could bring one change to the game and the industry itself, as you've experienced, if you could change it in one way, how would you change it?
Well, great question. You're putting me on the spot. I guess No, I don't know. I'm just thinking because you hear so much talk about it around this All-Star break, this playoff format. I know everyone, you know, the this is kind of the dog days of NHL hockey season. You know, I'm just thinking as a spectator, you know, you see the same playoff teams over and over. Maybe they change the format of the NHL playoffs. No, I guess that's, you know, that's not the greatest answer, but it's the first thing that came to mind with all the trade talk and NHL All-Star Weekend and all that kind of stuff. I think, you know, that's when I think you see the same teams playing over, and I get the rivalries, but I think with the way the NHL has done it and with all the stars and everywhere with the salary cap, I think it'd be pretty exciting to see some other players on live TV and maybe even at the games and stuff like that.
Thank you so much for your time, Corey. Thank you on behalf of all of 4P97.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
This brings us to this week's audio response question, which is going to be responding to the first half's lecture on the structure of professional hockey and Corey's guest lecture that he just shared with you there, as well as responding to the two articles and the general structure of professional hockey. I think that it's a pretty confusing world, the world of professional hockey. I think you probably can see now there's a lot of leagues. And again, I'm not terribly interested in having you memorize all of those leagues. That's not really the point of it. The point of it was to demonstrate, first of all, if you are a fan of another league, if you're a fan of another sport, you can notice that things are a little bit different in the field of hockey. And that difference, that variety in terms of professional options, leads certain players onto different career paths than you'll see in other sports. Generally speaking, the career that Corey had is just not really possible in professional football, for instance. That would be American football, not soccer. In that there are many different leagues that you can scatter yourself on playing for various levels. It's just a very, very unique career path present in hockey. It leads to specific challenges. So that's kind of where I want to go with your first audio response question, which is, how has the historical development of professional hockey in North America impacted the journey of a professional player today? That is again, how has the historical development of professional hockey in North America impacted the journey of a professional hockey player today? In this response, I do want you to consider things that make Corey's journey unique. Aspects of professional career that date back to the reading time, both the original six expansion and the formation of the National Hockey League. I think there's a lot you could go off of here. I do want you to sort of keep it grounded in the course materials, but feel free to really expand upon with the professional journey as Corey has described it here. Next week, we're going to have guest lecturers from Ryan Creeland, who's the ECHL commissioner, and Pete Soberlak, as I mentioned in the first week. So we'll have lots of great content for you next week as well. But I'm looking forward to listening to your audio responses. I can't tell you how delighting it is to listen to all your voices respond. It's actually even more enriching than the in-person because I get to hear all of you responding. So I appreciate those of you for putting some good thought into the audio responses, and I'm listening to each and every one of them. See you next week.